I realise what this looks like. An Irishman standing here talking about how we outperform the English at their own language. But I assure you, I am not prejudiced. My claims are based on a cold analysis, on fair judgment, on scientific observation. Sure, the English burned our homes and devastated our lands. They outlawed us from speaking our language and practicing our religion. But I assure you, I am not prejudiced. Even though the building that we stand in at the moment is a testament to the suffering of my people, the Irish colleges were safe spaces for the cultural heritage abroad in the face of persecution. But I assure you, I am not prejudiced. However, I do see why you might think that perhaps, maybe I have a bone to pick. So before I explain why the Irish are better at English than the English, I will share with you the evidence for this statement. And the evidence comes in three categories: linguistic, literary, and historical. So first, linguistics. There is a global consensus on the fact that Irish people are better at English. Just look at the number of people who come to our countries to learn the language. Sure, it may look like the English are winning. England has 550,000 foreign learners of English, while Ireland has only 110,000. But when you factor in the relative sizes of our country, things change. There is one language learner for every 50 Irish people, while there is one language learner for every 12,500 English people. Not only that, but on average, language learners spend 1.5 weeks longer in Ireland, which proves that we're better to spend time with, too. Indeed, it's clear that we would get many more people coming to learn English if only there were enough of us to practice with. And I know what you're thinking. Tom, haven't you just cherry-picked some statistics to support your point? You're right. That's exactly what I've done. But it doesn't make me wrong. But let me appeal to a fair and neutral party. And who more fair and neutral than the Swedes? When you look at the number of Nobel Prizes for literature, England isn't doing badly. They have 10. Meanwhile, the Irish, we have 4. At first, I thought, fair enough, they turn out more high-class writers than us. But then I looked at the list a little more closely, and I realized 2 things. First, when you remove the writers born in India, Wales, Trinidad, the US, Iran, the UK only have 5. Not only that, but they claimed an Irishman. Haven't you taken enough? That brings us to 4-4. And I minus 1 point for cheating, and Ireland wins. So finally, the historical reason. The Ireland of 600 AD was a learned place. There was a boom in monasteries and centres of learning, so much so that we ended up with too many monks. Actually, by some numbers, almost 1 in 5 Irish people at the time were scholars. So we began to export them to Britain, to Gaul and beyond. And they thrived, they rose in the ranks, and they became bishops and high-ranking clergy. Indeed, there was a time in the mid-600s when every single bishop in England was an Irishman apart from one, and he was French. One standard document the Irish were equipped with was a document called Patrick's ABCs. It was a pedagogical document meant to teach new scholars to read and write, and it was during this time that the first ever written document in English appeared. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The Irish had to teach the English to write in English. And I know what you're thinking. Tom, we're convinced. This odd collection of statistics and anecdotes has persuaded me entirely. But why? Why are the Irish so much better? Is it in your Gaelic DNA? Is it something in the water? But don't worry, I'll explain. And once again, the evidence comes in the same categories: linguistic, literary, and historical. For those who do not know, the Irish have our own language. It's called Gaeilge. In truth, only 1 to 3% of the population speak it daily. However, it is a mandatory subject in school, and we have to pass an exam in it to get into university. This means that we all speak it to some extent, even if we are a little rusty. Neurolinguistically speaking, this has a real impact on the way we think. How many of you speak another language? And how many of you make mistakes in your second language that you carry over from your first? This is totally normal. It's called transfer. And so the impact of the first language on the second is a well-studied phenomenon. Syntactic errors, structural changes, false friends. However, a less studied phenomenon is the reverse. The impact of learning a second language on your first. And in many cases, this impact is found to be positive. It opens up new cognitive pathways, allowing you to absorb new language and skills, new knowledge and skills, giving you new ways to organize your thoughts. It encourages precision. It helps you deal with abstract ideas better. And at the core of this, most important, it makes you engage with a new culture in a deep way. In turn, this enriches your use of your native language. And research shows that this effect lasts, even if underuse and forget large parts of your second language, your cognition remains fundamentally changed. So as a result, the Irish have structures, vocabulary, and frames of mind to them available that they would not have otherwise. Let me give you an example. In Irish, we have two words for the color green. Glas and uathna. Glas is the word for more natural greens, green pastures, vegetations, grass, and it can even include, in certain cases, the English concepts of blue or grey, just as long as it's natural. Uathna is for more artificial greens, something dyed. So in Irish, the concept of colour is more deeply linked to material, what something is made of, and this reflects something about the culture, an attachment to the nature, to the land. And people might not think about this actively, but as neurolinguistics show, these lessons remain, even after the language fades. It's not just different concepts we carry over, but grammar and vocabulary too. I'm after going to the shop means I went to the shop 5 minutes ago. I'm only after going to the shop means I just walked back in the door. These are grammatical constructions we use carried over directly from Irish. And vocabulary, much of which is adopted by the English themselves. Bother, from the Irish barum, to annoy or deafen. The word galore, which originated in Irish as galair, meaning plenty. And it's actually important to remember the source of these words because they tell us about the fundamental nature of things. For example, the word Tory, from the word tor, for pursue or chase, it's the Irish word for outlaw or scoundrel. But what is, in my opinion, most important is the cultural emphasis our people put on a good story. In ancient Ireland, there were three important people in a clan. The first was the Taoiseach, the chieftain, the political leader. The second was the Druid, the sorcerer and religious leader. And third was the Filly, the poet, the storyteller, and the memory of the community. Wherever the powerful went, a poet accompanied them. The sons of Mill, the final ancient race to settle Ireland, were accompanied by their poet, Amargin. And when he stepped off the boat which brought him to shore, he proclaimed, "I am an estuary in the sea. I am a wave in the ocean. I am the sound of the sea. I am a powerful ox. I am a hawk on a cliff. I am a dewdrop in the sun. I am a plant of beauty. I am a boar for valor. I am a salmon in the pool. I am a lake on the plain. I am the strength of heart." I mean, it's not that creative. He's just saying things that he is. I can do that. I'm standing at a podium. I'm getting a bit hungry. I should finish up soon. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it was an off day. Either way, the Irish were intoxicated by words. These poets carried the famous stories of our communities in an oral tradition. The Tán, Tir na n Og, Cú Chulainn, the children of Lir. Clearly intimidated by the Irish mastery of language, the English king, Edward III, made it illegal to host or entertain the filly, but our culture persisted. I suppose it's hard to keep track of an oral culture. A representative of the English crown walks in. What were you doing?
Nothing.
There's no evidence of telling a story. But day to day, telling a story is still deeply respected in Ireland. But to do so in Ireland, a nation of storytellers, is difficult. We have a very high bar, but I'll tell you how. First, you must establish yourself as humble. In fact, traditionally, if you're going to tell a story or sing a song, you should be asked. Ideally, your audience asks three times. Then, you don't want to hear the rest.
Yes, we do.
You no, 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 you don't.
Yes, we do.
Oh, no, 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 I couldn't.
Do it.
Oh, yeah, go on. Yeah, fine. Okay, so it starts with lowering expectations. You don't start by telling people this is the funniest thing ever. Or even worse, you think that's bad? Well, I am terrible. You open with something innocuous, but intriguing. Did I ever tell you about the house with two doors? Ah, yeah. I once had to give a speech in Irish. The only trouble was I didn't speak the language. And my personal favourite. Oh, didn't you hear about Mary? These are all actual stories. You can ask me after, but remember, ask three times. Another tip, if you're interrupted, don't protest. Don't talk over them. It's not becoming of an esteemed storyteller to fight to be heard. And anyway, they're at fault for not respecting the story. Let your audience tell them to shut the hell up. It's hard to define an Irish story otherwise, but there are some common themes that come up. It takes place in the past, but not so far back it's hard to relate to. Less before the wheel and more before the mobile phone. This triggers a sense of nostalgia in the old, but asserts authority over the young. Often, they have a figure of authority looking foolish. We love a bit of Schadenfreude. A bishop losing his hat, a politician tripping over a cat, or a former colonial ruler ridiculed. The only thing we love more are victims of hubris. The fall of someone who thinks they're great. Arrogance is a cardinal sin in Ireland. A bullish teacher being corrected by a student, or someone who skips the queue being denied service. More important, however, is to tell the truth, but to not let the facts get in the way of a good story. Not unlike this speech, which has carefully chosen statistics, quickly skimmed summaries, like dodgily understood academic research, and a provocative name. But really, it was just an excuse for me to tell you some nice things about Irish culture, and an excuse for a good story. And sure, look it. We even had the storyteller being asked to tell a story. Thank you, Brian. And a former authority figure looking silly. I'm sorry, England. Thank you.